you have a plan. And our class is on a verse spoken by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 24, text number 113. Here he says, Satanga Krishna Seva Bhagavata Nam Aili Vrajavasi Epancha Kavna Pranam. So he's speaking about five processes. Within the nine processes, we know that bhakti has Nava Anga, nine methods, or nine parts. These are listed by Sri Prahlad Maharaj in the famous verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, beginning Shravan Kirtan Vishnu Smaran Parasenam. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has, out of these nine, specifically focused on five. Why has he done that? Because he has stated that these five are especially necessary, especially important for the goal of bhakti, which is what? Which is Krishna prema. So if one desires to develop Krishna prema, then in one's devotional service, one has to especially look after these particular five items. Not to be dismissive of any other items, but these five, we can say, are the recommended way by Mahaprabhu himself. He has come into this world to give us love of Godhead, and so this is his instruction. Particularly attend to these five. So what are they? Again, the verse Satsanga, association with devotees. Krishna Seva. Now, literally that means service to Krishna. But more specifically, that is indicating the process of deity worship, Archana, Krishna Seva. Bhagavat. Bhagavat means hearing. So Shravanam Kirtanam, Shravanam, hearing. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavat Shastra. Nam, of course, chanting. Kirtanam, Shravanam, Kirtanam. So chanting the holy names of Krishna. And then A Rajavase means to live in a holy place. Like Sri Vrindavan Dham. So in the nine processes, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Dasyam, Vandanam Dasyam Archam, Archanam Atmanivedanam, Sakyam, in the form of the friend of the Lord, Atmanivedanam, surrender everything to the Lord. So these are not precisely the same, matching up. One is indicating the other. Because if we hear what we hear about Krishna, we hear his glories from the Bhagavat, the pure devotee of the Lord, and from the Srimad Bhagavatam. If we chant, what do we chant primarily? What is the Kirtanam? Primarily, it is the holy name of the Lord. Then, smarana, to remember Krishna. So this is why, for example, to live in a holy place, like Vrindavan, Sri Vrindavan Dham, is so important, because Sri Vrindavan Dham is the place of Krishna's pastime. So every, when you just go on a simple walk in Vrindavan, go from Krishna Balaram Mandir to the Jamuna, and back. You're actually passing by so many holy places, so many places of Krishna's pastimes, and this is offering you the opportunity to remember Krishna. So we can see that the five processes recommended by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the nine processes spoken of by Sri Prahlada Maharaj, they are very intimately connected. It's not that they exactly match up, but they're interrelated. So today we're going to follow in order: satsanga, Krishna seva, service to Krishna, Bhagavat, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Naam, chanting the holy name, Rajavasi, living in holy place like Vrindavan. So today our topic is satsanga, which means to associate with Sat. And Sat, of course, is name of Krishna. But that Sat, he is manifest in this world, in the sadhu, in the devotees. So satsanga especially means to associate with the devotees of the Lord. And that is satsanga, or also sadhusanga. So about sadhusanga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made a very significant point that Krishna bhakti janma mula hoya sadhusanga, Krishna premi janma teha puna mukya anga. This means that sadhusanga is the mula, the root of bhakti in the beginning. So you all know this example of the bhakti lata. It is like a creeper, and we water that creeper and it grows. You all know this example. But how is that bhakti lata, how is the bija of the bhakti, or the seed of the bhakti lata, first implanted in the heart? This is by sadhusanga, this is by association with the pure devotee or pure devotees of the Lord. And this is particularly why Srimad Prabhupada has manifested this International Society for Krishna Consciousness around the world, so that people, by associating with the devotees, will get the seed of bhakti implanted in their heart. So, Krishna bhakti janmamula. Janmamula means the root of birth of Krishna bhakti. Hoya sarusanga. That is in the association of devotees. Now, lest we think that, okay, so this verse is saying it is for the beginners. Sarasanga is important in the beginning. No, then in the next line, Mahaprabhu says, Krishna premi janma keno puna mukya anga. That even after one has achieved Krishna prema, love of Godhead, still sadhusanga is just as important as it was in the beginning. So, if the bhakti lata begins as a seed in the heart, then that seed must be watered and cultivated nicely. So, this means that we have to stay in the association of devotees. We have to keep nice association of devotees throughout the whole process of cultivating the seed to maturity. And when the seed comes to full maturity and blooms with the fruits and flowers of love of Godhead, then this enjoyment of the fruit of bhakti will also be experienced in the association of devotees. So you see, here it's very clear the difference between the bhakti process and the mayavan process. Prabhupada, he was once going to Ganga in Mayapur with a group of his disciples, and the bank down to the water's edge was his teacher. So one of his disciples, Sannyasi disciple, was assisting Prabhupada, helping him come down the bank. And when they reached the bottom, where they could touch Mother Ganga, that just as Prabhupada reached the bottom, and don't be shocked, this was for teaching a lesson, Prabhupada suddenly gave that sannyasi disciple a shove, shoved him away. And of course, he was shocked, this disciple, a little surprised. And others looking on were also surprised. Then Prabhupada, he smiled and he said to everyone, "So was that nice? Was that very nice? That he's helping me come down here? Now that I am down here, I push him away." And then he said, "But this is the Mayavad conception of Guru. See, Guru helps you to reach the goal, and then you don't need him anymore. Kick him out. You have become God in him. So, why should God have Guru? God doesn't need Guru." So this is the Mayavad Advaita conception. Bhakti conception begins in Sangha, association, and that Sangha follows all the way through until one reaches the ultimate goal. So, I want to speak about two examples of sadhu-sangha. One illustrating beginning, and the other illustrating sangha at the stage of love of Godhead. And both of these examples are very well known. So first, let us consider Mudrari the hunter. So Mudrari was a forest-dwelling hunter, and his culture, so to speak, that he learned from his father was to go out with bow and arrow and kill animals. Not only just kill them, but he took pleasure in half-killing them. He learned from his father to aim the arrow in such a way that it would not strike the animal dead immediately, but would injure the animal so that it would roll around in agony for a while before dying. And he used to like to see that. He thought that this was good fun. This was nice. And then when the animal dies, of course, then it takes the skin and the meat. So he had many, many skins. And it so happened while he was out in the forest, half killing different animals, and they were rolling around, that Sri Narada Muni, he understood the suffering of these creatures. So this great soul, this great Bhagavad devotee of the Lord, he appeared there. And by his transcendental potency, he mercifully glanced over the animals and healed them so that they could then scamper off. They could run off in different directions, go back to their homes. So Mudrari the hunter, he had been hiding behind a tree. After shooting the animals, he was hiding there, waiting to kill another animal. And he saw all this. So he was astonished. But although he was on the one side very surprised and not happy, yes, he was not happy. All these animals I took the trouble to shoot, now they have gone because of this person who has appeared. But at the same time, he could see this person is very, very, very extraordinary. He's so imposing, so wonderful looking, so pure. So he came out from his hiding place. And he was a little humble before Narada Muni. And he wanted to know, "Dear sir, why have you done this? This is my life, you know. I've learned this from my father. We kill animals in the forest. This is how we live. Why have you let them go?" And then Narada Muni said, told him, well, if you want to kill animals, then at least kill them completely. Don't let them suffer. That is why I have done this, to relieve them of their suffering. So what is the significance of this? We don't see that Narada Muni is immediately telling Madhurya to chant Hare Krishna. He's giving him some moral instruction, some dharmic instruction that will help Mudrari come up to a better standard of consciousness. And yes, indeed, this is the art of Sadhu Sangha. Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada practiced this art himself. When in the very early days, he would give initiation, Harinam Diksha, very easily to anyone he could see who was developed a fondness and attachment for chanting Hare Krishna, who was regularly coming to the programs, hearing Prabhupada give lecture. Prabhupada was very kind to give initiation. And of course, everyone would vow, because Prabhupada would ask them to follow the four regulative principles. But in those early days, in New York and then in San Francisco, actually the devotees were very, they were not very clear in their heads. So even after taking initiation, there might be someone who was still smoking. And Prabhupada would come to know of this, and he would say, well, then he would give them a program like, how many cigarettes do you smoke per day? And he would tell them, he would say, then each day you smoke one less. And then one less, one. And then finally, after some days, they would not smoke. So like this we see, in the beginning it is necessary to give very new people who are coming on low situation some platform upon which they can begin to reform themselves. So this was Sri Narada Muni's tactic. He began by instructing Mugari that if you're going to kill animals, then kindly kill them completely. Don't leave them half dead. So Mugari, now something had caught hold in his heart. Just by this brief association, he was becoming more and more attached to the association. So he wanted to give something. His heart became moved. I want to make a presentation to this great soul. Somehow, although he was beginning to understand, I'm very low and fallen, I'm very unworthy, but this great soul has come, and he's showing concern for me. He's taking time to instruct me, to help me better my life. This is very, very nice of him. So he wanted to offer something. So again, drawing on his very low class culture, the only thing he nice that he knew to offer were animal skins. So he was holding them up. I have very nice animal skins, just see, here's deer skin, here's this and that. And Narada Muni said, I don't know these things. Thank you very much for the gesture, for the feeling in your heart. But this is not what I would like from you. So Mugari became very curious. What would you like? And so in this way, their relationship deepened. Narada Muni asked Mugari, you really want me to tell you what I would really like to see you do? Oh yes, yes. So then Narada Muni gave him instructions that I want you to simply sit down in your cottage there in the forest and chant the holy name, and also you plant Tulasi Devi in your garden, and you sit before her, and you simply chant the holy name of the Lord, and you show him how to chant the names of Krishna. And you give up this entirely, this business of killing animals, just to stop it. So then Mubarak wanted to know, then how will I live? Because I have a wife, I have to take care of our family, and this is all I know how to do. No. You depend completely on Krishna. You chant. You worship Tulsi Devi. Take care of her. And Krishna will send you everything. Krishna will take care of Krishna. Actually, Maharaj says, I will ensure that you will not be needy. And so, Gauri the Hunter, having this most deep impression in his heart made by this Sangha, this association with the Sangha, he actually followed these instructions. And yes, because he renounced his former sinful life, planted Tulsi, sat down before her, chanted, and his wife followed suit, did the same. Then, far and wide, people came to know about this great transformation. That nasty old hunter, that Mugari, he's become such a great devotee. And people wanted to see, they wanted to have darshan. They wanted his sangha. You see? So they were coming from the villages, the towns and villages, making a trek through the forest just to come to the cottage ashram of Mugari and to see him sitting there chanting so seriously. And they would bow down and they would leave some offering. They'd leave some rice and some ghee and some vegetables. So his wife was able to prepare sumptuous prasad every day as a result. So then later on, Narada visited his disciple Mugari again. His close transcendental friend, Parvat Muni. And as Narada Muni was approaching the cottage ashram of Mugari, Mugari saw him from a distance. And in great eagerness, he ran forward to meet his spiritual master. But they saw him as he was running. He was running in a strange way, kind of jumping, not running in a straight line as one would expect, but he was jumping from side to side, hopping almost as if the earth was very hot, you see. And if the earth, you can imagine, the surface under your feet was very, very hot, how would you run? He was jumping from side to side. So he was running like that. And Parvat Muni was curious. He was looking at Narada Muni. And then Mugari came before these two great souls and bowed down. And Narada Muni then inquired from his disciple, why you were running in this fashion? And Mugari the hunter said, the former hunter, now Mugari the devotee, the pure devotee of the Lord, he said, well, my dear spiritual master, as I was crossing the ground, I noticed that there were many ants here and there. So I avoided to step on any one of them by putting my feet down here and there where there were no ants. And Parvat Muni turned to Narada Muni and said, what a great Bhagavata you are. That by your sangha, by your association, this person who was a hunter, whose habit was to have killed animals so cruelly and enjoy their suffering, now he's afraid even to step on one hand. What a wonderful explanation. So you see, this nice narrative, that Srila Prabhupada liked to tell, and I remember when I joined ISKCON, this was a very popular story. Devotees always like to narrate this. So we see in this how powerful sadhusanga is, that it can change a person's whole life from black to white. So this is, yes, Krishna bhakti janma mula hoya sadhusanga, the root of birth. Krishna bhakti is association with the pure devotees of the Lord. But what about Krishna prema janma? Keno puna mukya anga. What about the stage of prema? How then is the sadhusanga then? So, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have a most shining example of this, and that is in the glorious meeting of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Ramananda Roy. This was in South India. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for about 6 years, he desired to preach as a sannyasi. As you know, he had gone to Jagannath Puri after taking sannyasi, left Bengal, went down to Puri. And although his mother had intended for him to stay there, he thought, as a sannyasi, I should also go and preach. So for 6 years, he went around India, and especially he was in South India. So on his way down south, actually, even as he was preparing to leave, it was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And of course, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is another wonderful example of transformation of Sangha, because he was a Mayavadi Brahmana. But by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association, he became a very, very soft hearted Vaishnava. So, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, knowing that Mahaprabhu was going south, he thought of Ramananda Roy. And actually, he was thinking, when I was puffed up with my knowledge as a big Vedantist scholar, I did not give proper respect to Ramananda Roy. They had met each other past. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's tendency in those days was to look down his nose at devotees. Now that his heart had been purified by bhakti, now he could understand the greatness of Sripad Ramananda Roy. So he requested Mahaprabhu, "You please, as you go south, you please visit him, because I," he says to Mahaprabhu, "I do not know any other person who is more worthy to associate with you than Ramananda Roy, because he is so conversant in the rasa bhakti, that means in the knowledge of rasa, bhakti rasa, knowledge of the mellows of pure love of Krishna." So previously, Sarvabhauma was thinking that's all symptom. But now, he could understand that Ramananda Roy was the most expert, highest spiritual knowledge. So he ardently requested Chaitanya to meet him. And so, on the bank of the Godavari River, south of Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he sat down there to chant the holy name. And sitting there, a great party came of brahmanas and aristocratic persons. It was a party of important government people from the kingdom of that area. And Ramananda Roy, he held an important post as a minister in that government. So they were just coming to bathe on the Godavari River. And of course, this is all arranged by different Mahaprabhu. That Ramananda Roy, seemingly by chance, would come there and see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when they saw each other, when Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw each other, then immediately, just by seeing each other from a distance, the nectar of prema rasa began to flow. And they had to come and embrace one another, and they were shedding tears and showing symptoms of ecstasy. And they had to check themselves because the others there, very aristocratic brahmanas, they could not understand what this means. They were thinking, and this is very, very important, because you see, as people who are in bodily concept of life, who know about that type of sangha, which is called asat sangha, it is unreal sangha based on the body, they're not able to understand what sadhu sangha is, sattva sangha is. So these learned personalities, they were not open. This Ramananda Roy, by his caste, is a Shudra. And this sannyasi is obviously a Brahmana. So how can they embrace him in praise like that? What kind of display is this? So then they checked their transcendental devotions. And they arranged that they would meet later on. And so, when they did meet, it's also very interesting to see their expressions of humility towards one another. One very significant thing is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we've just explained, so if you take just the social, the mundane social outlook, he's a sannyasi. He's a Brahmana. And who is Ramananda Roy? He is by birth Shudra. Yet Mahaprabhu requested that Ramananda Roy answer his questions. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would put the questions and Ramananda Roy would answer. What does this mean? Who then is guru and who then is disciple? The one who asks the questions is disciple, and the one who gives the answers is guru. And the reason why Mahaprabhu did this, or let's say the apparent reason, as he said to Sripad Ramananda Roy, Ami Mayavari Sanyasi. I am a Mayavari Sanyasi. Because he had been initiated by Keshava Bharati, who is, of course, Bharati is one of the 10 orders of the Mayavari Sannyas coming from Shankaracharya. So Mahaprabhu was presenting himself as one who is following this impersonal path, knowing nothing about Krishna Bhakti, about the rasa of Krishna Prema. Of course, he is Radha and Krishna, and his mission is to spread Krishna Prema throughout the world. But he's actually showing an essential quality that must be there in order to gain the mercy that is being offered in sadhu sangha. One must be humble, whatever one's position may be, but one must be humble, and one must see the spiritual identity, not simply be thinking in terms of external caste, social position, reputation, this and that, but actually see the spiritual identity of the devotee. So this one was Mahaprabhu was seen in Ramananda Roy. And just as he said, I have been recommended by Sarvabhauma Bandhan, try to have your association proceed in this way, you instruct me. So, of course, Ramananda Roy, he was also, likewise, very, very meek and humble. He was not going, oh yes, I'm now the big guru here. But he was actually declaring to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that whatever you want of me, I will do. I am like a stringed instrument, and you are playing. The sounds that come out of my nose are actually being generated by you anyway. So, if this is your will, so be it. Then I will take this role. So this is very, this is not to be missed. This is so essential in real sadhusanga that the external upadis, you know, designations, so-called important designations that people take on, whether, again, I'm a brahmana, I'm a learned scholar, I'm a this, I'm a that, it all has to be put away. So then, how did the discussion go? So, next important lesson. This is a lesson for all of us. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Ramananda Roy is his eternally liberated associate, and both of them are merged in the ocean of love of Godhead. Did they immediately start talking about Raja Leela, Radha Krishna, pastimes? No. They started, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's first question was about, as he termed it, Sadhyara Nirnaya. So Nirnaya means determination, so deliberation. And Sadhyara, Sadhya means the goal of life. So he requested from Ramananda Roy, please instruct me on the goal of life. Please explain to me very scientifically what should be the goal of life. And so Ramananda Roy began to answer, and he followed a certain pattern in his answers. And we can learn by understanding this pattern, we can learn about how to preach nicely. So his first reply was that the goal of life is that we should be situated in Varna and Ashrama. Varna, Ashrama, Dharma. And he cited a verse that Vishnu Arajyate Panta Nanya Tattusha Karanam. That there is no other way to satisfy Lord Vishnu than to execute your life's duties under Varna and Ashrama. So, yes, this is the beginning of Vedic culture indeed. And Srila Prabhupada spoke so much about the importance of devotees acting within their varna. We have to, of course, Prabhupada said that one has to become purified to know what varna is. So, this is also not an easy thing, but, you know, this is a sort of thing. So therefore the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra comes first in any case. But by chanting we clear up even our material nature, so that our natural svadharma becomes more apparent. And then we should act in that position, be peaceful. At least this is recommended. Of course, in the Kali Yuga, considering the conditions of Kali Yuga, what we're talking about here is somewhat idealistic. You see, the real thing is that we should become Krishna conscious and go back home, back to God. And if we can become nice, understand what our varna is and act on that platform, that's very good. But Kali Yuga is very disturbed. So this is why, although this answer, this first reply of Ramananda Roy is not incorrect, Mahaprabhu did not say it was incorrect. But what did he say? He said, Eho Bhaya, in Bengali this means, that is external. That's external. So you can say something more. You can come to a higher platform than this. So yes, because it is Bhaya, it is the external, you know, Bahiram Gashandi. What is this Varna Ashram Dharma? It is a mature creation. Chattva Varna Maya Shristam. Guna Karma Vibhagasam, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. I have created this Varna Ashram, but it is according to Guna Karma, quality of work in this material world. And so, this Guna Karma is not addressing the nature of the soul. So therefore, Mahaprabhu said, you can say something more. So then, Ramananda Roy, he added devotion to Varna Ashram Dharma in a very formalized sense. He cited this verse from Bhagavad Gita, Yat Kuroshi Rashnasi Yat Juhoshi Dharasya. This is where Krishna says, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer, all that you give away, this should all be done for me. Tat Kurusha Madarpana. Do this as an offering for me. So, Varnashram Dharma is Dharma. It is religious. It is occupation, but at the same time it is religious. At every level, Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Brahmana, or Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. At every one of these levels, there is sacrifice which is ordained. Our activities are not simply for ourselves in Varnashram Dharma. In modern so-called human society, everyone has this idea, I'm working for myself. That is also not true. Because we are always servants. This conception can be easily taken apart. But, you see, that is the conception. That's what everyone is thinking. Everyone is thinking, I'm working for myself. I have this job. I'm earning money. Who is this money for? It's for me. It's for me or for my family. But in Varna Ashram Dharma, all the activities, the svadharmas, the individual duties of everyone, is designed to be a yajna, a sacrifice. So everyone is conscious, I am not working for myself. So what Ramananda Roy is saying is that what must be established then is the conception that I am doing my duty for Krishna. Because, you know, like you can see in India today, under the influence of Hinduism, which is not specifically, not necessarily Krishna conscious or Vaishnava. Hinduism is a kind of open door to anyone. You want to worship Vishnu, that's nice, but if you want to worship Shiva, that's also nice, Durga. So people think of Dharma in that way, that I'll make sacrifice to Ganesh or to some other deity. And why is this? Because they want something back, some material blessing back. So this way, the Varna Ashram Dharma becomes more like a business. Business transactions. You do something for the God, he does something for you. And this way you try to prosper in this world. But this is not the true sense of Varna Ashram that we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam. As you know, that type of duty done for selfish reasons, for calm, for sense of gratification, where there's no awakening of God consciousness, of Krishna consciousness. Swami Eva Kevalam, Bhagavatam says, most emphatically, it is a waste of time. In other words, you have had the opportunity to really do Dharma, but because you have done it in this very materialistic way, only thinking of this life, what I can give for myself, you have wasted. You have wasted the chance. This is what the second stage Ramananda Roy was stressing. Yes, Varnashram Dharma should be done, but done for Krishna. Yadgaroshi, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you do. So still Mahaprabhu said, in Hubai, that's external. Now why would he say this? Because you see, Varnashram Dharma is basically impelled by material impulses. Varnashram Dharma is a social system in this material world. Ultimately, it is largely how it is working, how it is functioning, is being moved by the impulses of the body. People have to eat, these ahara, nidya, maya, maitunya, eat, sleep, defend themselves, and reproduce. The same impulses that are pushing the animals in their activities. So this is what we call mundane society. So Varna Ashram is nice. It is material, but it is nice because it is a mode of goodness. But still, that is the platform. I am doing because I have to maintain this body. That's the consciousness remains in Varna Ashram. And therefore it is mundane. And then if we do for Krishna, in that mundane consciousness, well, that is certainly not the most advanced stage. That is, Prabhupada used to always say, that is good. That is very good. That instead of, like you would talk about the Christians who pray for their daily bread, he would of course say, that is not love of God, it is love of bread. But still it is good that they turn to God for eating their food rather than turn to some atheistic social system. Prabhupada used to say that during the communist revolution in the former Soviet Union, because the people, the village people were very, very religious, very pious. They were poor, but very depending upon God for everything. So the communists would come to a village with a truckload of bread. And they would assemble all the villagers and say, so, are you hungry? And say, yes, we are very hungry. And you all believe in your Jesus, in your God? Yes, we are very faithful. Then why don't you pray to them? Or bread. And so the simple people would do that, but of course no bread would come. And then the communists would hold up a big portrait of Comrade Lenin and say, now pray to him and see what he So, very simple. They're very simple people. So they would pray to Lenin, and then they would unload from the truck of bread. And then the people would think, oh yes, it's a better religion to believe in Lenin. So, Prabhupada said, better than, yes, developing that sort of materialistic, atheistic faith. It's good that people pray to God, even if it's just for bread. But this is still the mundane platform. So therefore, Mahaprabhu, he said, you can't say more than this. So, then on the third stage, Ramananda Roy came to the point of sannyas. So sannyas means putting aside these bodily demands. But now I will renounce this. And he even cited then verse, key verse in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadana Purichita Mama Kapushana Namrata. But Krishna asked Arjuna, you surrender to me. Take shelter of me. Give up all other dharmas and just take shelter of me. So now we might think that, oh, this must be the answer. But still Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Ehobaya, this is external. You have still not come to the good point. So why is that? Well, it is not unusual for a person who is frustrated in his material duties, in his business of maintaining the body and the bodies of his family members. It is not unusual for such a person to take this step, to give everything up. When I was a teenager then in the United States at that time, the late 1960s, a very great percentage of my generation took sannyas. For a while anyway. They gave up, they dropped, you know, the slogan was tune in, turn on, and drop out. So they were dropping, you know, leaving their homes and leaving the universities and not taking any work, just living in the street by begging and hitchhiking and congregating in places like Haight Ashbury in San Francisco. And Prabhupada used to call these hippies the new mendicants, the new sannyasis, in other words. And even they were growing their hair long, like the sadhus in India, and smoking hashish and chanting some Shaivite mantras, things like that were going on, indicating what they had been in their last life. So spontaneously coming back. So, now this wave of renunciation in the United States, for the most part, it didn't go anywhere. It didn't last very long, and it didn't go anywhere. I remember, I think it was about 1973, something like that. That was a few years after this hippie wave. The hippie wave was from about 1966 to 69, 70. And then by the 1970s, the hippies started to rejoin societies, maybe bringing their long hair with them, but they were starting to come back and work within society again. So in 73, I was in some town.